There we go. Alright. There we go. There. I'll start recording on that one again, just to be on the safe side. Alright, here we go.
Who's the best show here?
That show!
Who's the best show here?
That show!
Yeah, that's the best one yet.
I am short.
Pizza, pizza.
Showtime! Just swinging in the breeze.
Nothing wrong with getting a little dirty.
I'd like sweet meat.
Are you a making it young in the kitchen? I was in the dining room having sushi.
It's a little thing tech show, and that's a fact. If you don't like the cast, you can stick it up your ass. Ain't no funny duddies that a link it bad. For the stream, go to WDLGS.org. And ICChallengeAnalytics.net. Bound tech show. Just sit right there, cause the castle's just about to begin.
Welcome to episode 1101 of the Linux Link Tech Show. On the show tonight, we have Joe.
Yep, I'm here.
We have Dave S. Yates.
Me too.
And Joel will probably be bouncing in here to tell us about his new supplement regime any minute now. But before that, I've got back into the Terraform this week, Dave. Does that excite you?
Not a little bit.
Exciting me? How about that? You know what? The more I use Terraform, the more I really don't like it. I don't understand, like, I mean, I get it, but I don't understand why they chose to do things the way they do. It's a weird syntax to me, in that if you want to do like a loop through something, like we have a list of application object. It's an array. I don't even know what you call it in Terraform. I'm that bad at it. But we have that array. And so if you want to like loop through it, it's like, it's not well defined. And like, you know, like most programming, like in Bash, you have like a for or a while loop or something like that. And you can actually look at the code and you can see where the loop is, even if it's not like well formatted, kind of like a Python script where spacing and indentation matters, so you can really get a better grasp of what's doing what and where's a function and where's a loop and how that's working. In Terraform, it's just like this line that says like each for whatever it is, but the rest of the block that it's supposed to loop through and create is not like bound in any way by braces or brackets or anything. It's like almost like you wouldn't even know that it was in a loop by just looking at it. I find that very confusing. And having to do like if statements and checking stuff gets really confusing how to do that. But anyway, a couple weeks ago when we had the outage in Google, and I think I spoke about this, we had a number of alerts set up. Well, it was one alert policy that was supposed to inform us when any one of our containerized applications that were running in Google Cloud Run, when any of the container instance counts went to zero. Now, all of them went to zero, and no alerts fired. So I was doing some testing this past week in our development environment. And what was frustrating about it is that I had a hell of a time trying to get it to actually trip an alert without having a legitimate error case. So I had set that the same policy that we have in production, I brought that down into development. And in our development environment, all our applications run with a on-demand instance. So we, if due to the fact that it is development and there's not a lot of activity to save cost, if an application hasn't been used or hit within like 5 minutes, it'll spin it down. So in the morning when nobody's doing anything, there are no instances of any of the applications running. When you go to access one of the applications, it spins it up. It usually takes about 10 to 15 seconds for the application to spin up and for it to respond. So I was doing testing on that, and I would bring up an application and I have the alert policy in place, but it would never trigger. And I was getting to the point where I'm like, okay, I think maybe it's smart enough to know that it's not a legitimate problem because it's configured this way. So then I even tried to like break it by deploying a version of the application image that doesn't exist, and it caused an error, but it didn't alert anything. So I was racking my brain trying to figure out, you know, I don't know for certain whether it's just smart or the alerts aren't working. So then I just, you know, eventually I came upon the idea, let's switch it around. Let's set an alert for when there is one or more instance of the container. And sure enough, that alerted. So I was kind of happy to verify that the alerts were. So I chalked it up that the reason they didn't alert when the Google outage happened was because, given that it was a Google problem, it probably impacted alerting and the metrics on that side, which is why we didn't get any information. Anyway, so I went to start doing writing our alert policies to Terraform, and I really wished I could have taken advantage of the application structure that we have so that I could just tell it in the Terraform file, loop through this list of applications, and create the alert policy that way. So immediately the problem that I ran into with doing that, like I could get it, it appeared like I could get it to work, but I looked at this and said, okay, so an alert policy has conditions, and I don't know if this is a limitation of Google alert policies in general. I didn't really invest the time to look at it, but in terraforming an alert policy, you can have a maximum of 6 conditions. So what would end up happening is that the only way I could figure out how to automatically generate this, based upon our app structure or that app object, and the advantage would have been that anytime we add a new application into that object, it would automatically generate the alerts for it. That would have been nice. But what have ended up happening is that it would create an alert policy with one condition in it. And not necessarily bad, but it kind of looks ugly, and some other teams do that. I personally would rather have like one alert policy per application, and in there the different alert conditions. And that's so what would end up happening is, following that structure, it would be extremely challenging and complicated to figure out how to get more than one condition into an alert policy, and those conditions would be based upon the application in and of itself, and what the specific conditions are for that. Like, you know, it might be, hey, there's this log message that's been observed 5 times in a 10-minute period. We should trigger an alert for that. That's for one specific application, wouldn't apply to any others. So in that case, we'd end up having to generate another alert policy just for that condition based upon the way that we were operating. So that kind of nipped that in the bud. Even after I figured out how to get that to work, we decided that we weren't going to use that and instead go with an alert policy file per application written in Terraform. That way we can put all the conditions that we want for that specific application in there. It kind of takes away some of the advantage that we were having with the automation of it, but it makes it a hell of a lot less complicated and less ugly on the policy side. And you know, the documentation that they have for this is always lacking. So they have when you go to manually set up an alert policy, alert condition in the Google metrics, alerting and metrics, they have a GUI interface where you can select different things. Like a resource type is a cloud run in revision, and in there is like a bunch of options that you can narrow down to eventually get to something that does the instance count. That you could switch, once you get that in, you could switch that view to MQL or PQL. There's two different ways that you can do it, languages that they have for that. That you can take any three of those or SQL and write your alert condition like that, but it's not well documented onto all the different things. Like, I wanted to do a revision type of cloud run revision, and then set the service name, which shows in the UI, to that application name, but it wouldn't allow me to do that when I tried to apply to Terraform. Instead, I had to do label.serviceName, and then it would work. So it's little things like that where you have to dig around and hope that somebody else wants to do something, the same thing that you did, and ask the question somewhere and got an answer. But it's that thing that you won't know what to look for until you're actually trying to do it, and you get it tells you can't do this because there's an error, and you're like, well, why? It looks like it should be right, and there's no documentation. Like, the documentation it links me to doesn't give me any information about what I need to do. So then you have to piece all that together, ask a question in a search engine, and cross your fingers, and there we go. You're off to the races. Yeah, it's really annoying. But that's the way it is, Dave. That's the way it is.
Sound like an old man.
I am. I'm Dave. Get that.
He is an old man.
Get off my computer screen. Right. And so, you know, I got it working, and now I'm just refining it. We're going to apply it across all the applications and go from there. It gives me something to do. You know, I don't really like the Terraform syntax. When I presented all the options that we had of how we could lay this out, one question was, well, can we just put them in a subdirectory? That way, you know, we can keep all the alerts in that subdirectory. Terraform doesn't let you have subdirectories. If you want to do something like a, quote, subdirectory, that subdirectory has to be turned into a module, and then that module has to be referenced from the top-level directory files, which then means that you can you can have that module anywhere else in the world, and including in a whole other GitHub repository, so long as where you're trying to access that module from has access to that location. So, it's just kooky stuff that you could do, and there's a lot of flexibility there, but it's really, I don't think, an approachable language. To me, it's not like a lot of the other languages I work with that you're like, oh, okay, that makes sense. That looks right. Terraform to me never looks right. It's like they took YAML and
it's for building servers. I mean, that's what in infrastructure, that's what it's for.
It's not
for all that. Yeah.
But to do like any kind of looping and all that stuff, it's just not, to me, it's not as friendly and approachable. It's
more,
as most,
more once you say deploy this, deploy this, deploy this, deploy this, done. Kinda.
Yeah, but you can do, like I say, you could do loops and conditionals and stuff like that, but they don't look like any other language I've really ever
right,
used.
Right.
They're not. I don't.
It's
like
its own thing.
I don't like it. I don't like it, Dave. God damn it. Gosh darn it. I don't like it.
And for a long time, I used to, because we use it too. I don't personally, you know, my team doesn't deploy anything. All right. We're break fix, you know, when the cloud teams fuck stuff up, we fix it. Okay. You know, so, but it's like the only time, it's not like we're deploying, well, the SaaS team deploys stuff more often than the managed cloud. Once things are deployed in managed cloud, it's there, and you maintain it with other tools like Ansible and our own tools that we have, UI-based tools, you know, there's a tool we have called SA Valet, you know, that does the updates of DMI listeners and stuff like that. None of that's compatible. None of that really works through that stuff, at least for the managed cloud components that I deal with on a daily basis. Now, for the SaaS team, when a new version comes out, they roll out a new server, and it's also a Linux server now. It used to be Windows servers that they would roll out. But they brought out versions of API and self-service on our products that run on Linux now using the .NET Core because they're .NET applications. So, but you know, so there are the SaaS components, and this is in a lot of cases, if you deal with a SaaS company, they're probably using Terraform left and right. And one of the big reasons you use Terraform versus stuff other than that is that it's platform diagnostic. You can use Terraform to deploy on AWS. You can use Terraform to deploy on Google or Azure even. So it should deploy on all of them. It might even deploy on IBM for all I know. I don't know how many different cloud platforms it can deploy on. But and that is a smart tool to adopt, because for example, Dan's company decides, hey, we're done with Google, we're going to go to AWS, make a few changes, and now you're deploying on AWS.
You got to make a lot of changes.
I'm making it sound simple. I know it's not.
Yeah, I mean, it's nice that you have it, you know, when you have it defined. And you're right. There's just like resource things that you need to change, and probably, you know, it's just like switching from one language to another almost, but the framework and the structure is there. You just need to translate it into the syntax or the verbiage that is being used, the language. That makes it sound like you're going from like JavaScript to Perl or something, but no, it's just like you need to just change it from this definition to that definition.
And, yep.
Because a lot of the concepts are the same, but the resource names are different, and maybe some of the key values in the resource might have key names have to change or whatever. I have a question for all of you. And maybe you can help me better understand this. Is anybody familiar with Passkey?
Passkey, like
it's the new newish security.
I probably use it.
So basically, what they're saying Passkey is, it's a, instead of using a password or two-factor authentication,
yes, once your system has the passkey, you no longer have to log in.
you have, it's a biometric supposedly a biometric,
yes, can be biometric, right,
identification tied to a specific device, so that, yep, if you, like your phone, so if you're going to log into your bank's website from wherever, whatever device, it would prompt you on your phone to validate that initial login, if I'm, yep, correct, by either having to scan your front thumbprint or some kind of biometric or a PIN, right? So
sometimes it's not even that. Sometimes it's just the existence of the passkey, at least with some of the thing places I've used it. What is I using on crap?
On crap, when you take a crap, you got
no.
Yeah, it's the only way his toilet will open.
No, I'm trying. I know I use. Well, the thing is I know I use it. It's just I'm trying to remember who I use it with, because there's more than one. Google. I use it with Google.
Google and Amazon both have moved to pass.
Yes. Yes. And I just literally, once the key is on the system. Now, if it's not on the system, then what happens is it goes to the system where it is,
right,
like your phone, prompts you for that, and then it copies it down. So, but once it's on there, you don't have to do anything. At least that's been my experience.
So I guess my question is, my question about this is, and they're touting it as, is like, okay, so it's incredibly a lot more secure than using username and password and two-factor authentication, that now it's either a biometric or a PIN verification. But then ultimately, once you get down to that device, if it is a PIN verification, what is the difference between that and a password?
I mean, if it's tied to the device, is it not like it's a debit card? It's something you have and something you know, or in this case,
it's kind of both.
Yes, it's a device and something on the device.
Right. And it depends on, like, I know Entra has, with that Microsoft stuff, it can have it, but then it'll want you, like, I had a friend who manages.
Wait, you had a friend?
I got lots of friends. I thought you guys were my friends, but maybe not. No, I'm kidding. He does IT for his senior center that he's a part of, and they have whatever the free version of Microsoft 365. And he got frustrated that he has to load Microsoft Authenticator now on his phone in order to manage the free Microsoft 365. You might be able to use like Google Authenticator or something like that, but in any event, like
Entra, no, you can't. And that's the thing, because I've read in one of the articles I was reading recently. Well,
it's all based on the same technology that Entra uses.
Right. So Microsoft is moving away from passwords in the next couple of weeks.
Correct.
To passkey. So you have to use passkey for some stuff. And I'm like, well, okay.
Apple's one of the first that had it.
So you have to have something of theirs installed on another one of your devices.
Yes. Yes, and the same thing with Google's done it too with their Google Authenticator, although you can change it here and there, you know.
Yeah, but with Google Authenticator, you were already using a Google device in most cases.
Correct, in most cases, yes. Well,
so Google Authenticator,
because I have a friend, he also manages Google Workspaces for them, because for some reason he's got both Microsoft 365 and Workspaces for the email. His frustrating thing is he's an Apple guy, and he likes to have, he wants to use manage all the different Google Workspaces using an Apple device, and the Apple device sucks at having multiple Gmail accounts on it and multiple Authenticator accounts.
Well, wait, hold on a second, just so I'm correct on this. Does Google Authenticator do passkey? Is that what Google's?
It can, yes.
So if you're using passkey on Google, what are you using to manage the passkey on your designated device?
Is it Google Authenticator?
Generally, I'll get either prompted from either either comes through Authenticator or maybe my Gmail. I don't remember. It's been a while since I had to move the passkey around because almost all my devices have a copy of the passkey right now at this point. So my MacBook and as well as this laptop I'm on now and my old Windows machine, which I haven't logged into since I got the MacBook.
Well, then how does that – how is that – how is that more secure now? If all of a sudden,
well, it's instead a key pair. Yeah, it's a key pair. It's just like a SSH keys, very similar to that.
Right.
So you have the public key.
If it's on your phone, then you're also required to not only have your phone, but be able to log into your phone.
Exactly. Use your biometrics through the fingerprint or face. Face unlock, because my Pixel 9 Pro has face unlock as well.
But what I'm saying is if you're saying you have it, that passkey now is on all your devices, and you leave your devices sitting around, and somebody goes to log into your email,
you got to thumbprint into my device.
Still got to put their biometrics in every time that you normally require a password. I'm not agreeing that it's more secure. It sounds like it's more invasive than anything else.
Okay, so if you set up passkey on your phone, let's say it's on your Android phone, and then you go log in the Gmail on your laptop, and it wants you to validate on your phone that that's you logging in through the passkey on your phone.
Has been
and
a thing it, around
I get
for
a
notification.
Time. Yeah, I get a notification.
And then you say yes. You
say phone,
yes, that's
say
you,
yes,
and it drops the passkey down here on your laptop.
Right.
So now every time you go to log into Gmail on your laptop,
it
sees the passkey there.
It can. It doesn't necessarily do that. It will go to the device you have the passkey on and then say, hey, are you okay logging this in? And then you log in.
Right. So then you log in. But you say you have the passkey on all your systems, right?
Not necessarily. I might have misspoke. But
he's
I'm
using
not,
the passkey on all his
I
systems, but he's required to have it on his phone for the authentication purposes.
Yeah, or somewhere. It doesn't have to be my phone. I can literally copy it to any of the devices I want to using certain applications if I need to.
But it sounds like the additional problem, or I don't even know if this is a problem, is that Apple's implementation of passkey and Microsoft's implementation of passkey and Google's implementation of passkey all require you to use a specific application to generate and manage that passkey, correct?
I would say yes, probably.
So then, if I'm using a Linux-based machine with an Android device and I need to log into Microsoft 365, I have to have Microsoft's whatever it is that they're using to manage passkey, I don't know what it is, on my phone if that's my designated device, and I can't use like Google Authenticator from what I understand.
Well, there are other applications that can do it, like 1Password can do it.
1Password can manage your passkeys for all your applications for all, across different services. Apple,
I didn't
Microsoft.
Say that. I said it could do passkeys as well.
Yeah, I think Bitwarden can do passkeys as well.
Yeah.
But what I'm saying is that compatible?
It's more or less supposed to be somewhat of a standard of sorts.
I get it's supposed to be a standard, but from some of the stuff I'm reading, it's that Apple and Microsoft have their implementation of passkey, and it doesn't make it clear what it is that you need ultimately to manage this passkey. Does it require like right now, if I go and I log into Entra at work? Right? Used to be with Okta, I could use Google Authenticator, but Entra will not let me use Authenticator. The only thing I could use is Microsoft's Authenticator or have it text me.
Yes.
Or email me or call my phone.
And the text part's going to stop.
So the texting and emailing part. So then if it won't do those two things, I need to have Microsoft's authenticator to, and it's that quote passkey. So therefore, that means I can't use any other application other than Microsoft's designated passkey application to manage that passkey.
So I just dropped into, at least with Google here, because you can manage your Google passkeys with Chrome. Okay. But the way it works is to store your passkeys on your device, on your Android device, you must have Android 9, and you must also have the screen lock turned on. Okay, so you cannot use the passkey unless you have screen locks turned on. So, but you can use the passkey on another device. So, like, for example, to use a passkey from your Android device on your computer, open Chrome, go to the sign-in page. When prompted to use your passkey, tap a different device. You may have to tap try another way. Scan the QR code with your Android device. And that's pretty much it. It says after you scan the QR code in your Android device, you can choose to have your devices remember each other. If you do, the computer shows your Android device as an option when you need a passkey. When you select it, you receive a notification on your device to verify your identity.
Okay, but that's just for Google, right?
Correct.
That doesn't do anything if you're using Microsoft products. So, again, what it comes down to is you need different apps to manage your passkeys across different...
That is what it's sounding like at the moment.
And that seems like...
That's bad. Yeah, that's awful.
That... Because I know that, because when I started looking into, okay, so how does Linux handle passkeys? Well, it can. But
through your browser.
Well, you have to use, like, third-party applications, so to speak, or plugins for different things, because it's not like... It's not like a yeah, I mean, so... It seems like... They're taking that, and I get it, they're taking that whole we're going to manage your username and password and kind of putting it back that you have control over it in as much as you have to use whatever application they designate that you need to use that's compatible with their passkey service, which... I guess, again, I'm like, if you're trying to log into Microsoft 365, can you set all that up under Linux and not have to use anything other than, like, I have my Linux laptop be my main passkey device that manages all that so that when I try to log into Apple Music,
so
is
like,
it going to be compatible, or am I going to have to have that on an Apple authentication app?
Yeah, here's what it says. Yeah, one of the things I just Googled was using a passkey from Apple on Android. It says, yes, it's possible to use an Apple passkey on an Android device, even if the app or website doesn't natively support passkeys on Android. This is achieved through features like QR code scanning and Bluetooth sharing. So how it works, you create the passkey on iOS, sign in on Android, all right, and then it says it gives you the option of using different phone or tablet or similar, and then you scan the QR code with the Android device, you know, Bob's your uncle, and you're in. All right.
Okay, so if you scan the code with your device, what on your device is managing that passkey then?
In that case, it would be your browser or the application, like, for example, Apple Music any of the Apple applications that you would need to log into with your iOS passkey on the Android device. So my next Google is using passkeys on Linux. It says passkey support on Linux is growing, but it's still primarily supported through third-party applications and hardware security keys. While some distributions like Ubuntu, and this is the AI Labs thing, which is annoying, But it says, while some distributions like Ubuntu have basic support and Red Hat Enterprise Linux 9.4 now offers passkey functionality, comprehensive native support is still developing. So there is no comprehensive support on Linux yet.
So I get that. That's my question then, though, is if you're using Android and logging into Microsoft products, then is it a Microsoft product that manages the Microsoft passkey, or is it Android product that manages? Is it a Google product that manages the Microsoft passkey?
Yeah.
Does that what I'm not clear on.
There's a good article on tuxcare.com there. I've just started to read it. That says, in a recent Ars Technica article, Dan Gooden provide an insightful critique of passkey technology's current state. I'm going to have to read that article too. Highlighting on how its elegant technical foundation is undermined by fragmented implementation and platform lock-in issues. So basically what we've been talking about.
Yeah, because I did read this article, and that's why I came away from this.
This one or the
No, I read through the TuxCare article when I was looking into this, which, again, it left me with a lot of questions. And it's like,
okay.
This seems like, what was it, TPM? Remember that? Was that it? Trusted?
Yeah, a little bit.
Trusted. Where you had,
which is still an Intel machines,
UEFI, where you had the keys, and it was like that thing where, okay, you know, Microsoft is managing working with, and then, you know, if you're using Linux and you want to enable that, it's a big pain in the ass, or was for a while.
Uses a FIDO 2 specification here, and let me put the Ars Technica article in there.
But yeah, so that's why it's like, I didn't know if any of you guys have been using it, have that more information, because what it does sound like is that, you know, however Microsoft is doing it in Apple, there's their standards, but
yeah, FIDO 2.
Yeah, there's standards, but then again, it's like, okay, it seems like Microsoft is going to require you to have a specific kind of management application, whether it's their own or they, you know, Google has something that works with that, but it doesn't seem like you can just easily fire up your Linux machine and all of a sudden use that as managing all your passkeys, and that's the
Let me preface this though. Isn't it more convenient to use your mobile device? Because you always have that with you everywhere, you know. That, I mean,
What if I decide to wipe it out and install Linux on my mobile device, right? Okay, then I can't do that.
Okay,
then,
okay. Which mobile Linux distribution, Ubuntu?
Well, you can sit there and laugh and cackle all you want, but I guess that's what I'm saying.
Where I'm going with that. It's like,
the only things you're allowed to use anymore are Android or iOS. That's it. You cannot put custom on anything anymore.
That's what some idiots say, right? You know, I know. I mean, that's the thing, you know. Well, let's face it. How many, at one point, there was a big push for a mobile Linux device. Like back in the day, I remember what was the one? There was MAMO. That was one. There was other ones too. Like back in the Palm days. What did you say?
Maru OS.
Okay, but that's not one. I'm trying to remember the devices themselves. There was that one. Was it Pine by Royal? Phone? No. Well, that's one, but that's a little different. That's more a little bit more modern.
Canonical tried it, didn't he?
Well, you know, too, okay. Yeah.
You know what? You could go down and the Firefox list of all OS, those things. You could go down a
and all failed.
That doesn't matter. Okay. What I'm saying is, okay, let's take Linux out of the picture. All right. I'm running an Android phone. I don't want to have to install a Microsoft application and an Apple application to manage passcodes for some of those services I might have to use in other places. You know what I mean?
Well, them's the breaks, man. That's the way it is, unfortunately. Well, what do you want me to say? I mean, if you want a Linux-based option for it, write it. That's what a lot of folks will say.
Well, no, even if you wrote a Linux-based operating system for a phone, and there are plenty out there, you're still not going to be able to install these applications because
that's
they
the other
require
thing,
a certain amount of validation.
Correct.
And that's at the operating system level. So you're required to either run Android or iOS because that's where these applications
work.
Those
are the top two applications.
You're locked in.
But to Dan's point, it take Linux out if you're using an Android phone. What technical reason is there that is keeping you from using Google Authenticator instead of Microsoft Authenticator? There isn't one, right?
Wait, you asking me what
Microsoft?
No, I'm saying your point was a while ago is take Linux out of it and say you're on an Android phone. You don't want to install the Microsoft Authenticator.
I don't want like four Authenticator apps.
You don't have, a freaking choice, though. That's the thing.
But for no good reason. There's no technical reason that I can think of that requires one authenticator over another. It's a choice that some companies make.
Right. And I guess that's what I'm getting at. Is that the direction we're going? Is that the thing? Like, okay, now you got to use passkey, but if
unfortunately,
you passkey,
that's what it's looking like.
You know, and you have to do like where I work, we have Google and we have Microsoft. And we're on Apple systems, on laptops. So, like, it's like, okay, so now if I need to do something to log into our Microsoft single sign-on or whatever, the Entra thing, instead of Okta, now I can't use Google Authenticator to manage that. I'm going to have to get Microsoft's Authenticator. But Google's not going to work with Microsoft's Authenticator, so the Google services have to be part of Google Authenticator. And then I go and so like
if and it's just, it's unwillingness on Microsoft's part. I mean,
but then so then what happens then if with my bank?
I have to drop. Evidently my wife is busy and my daughter needs picked up, so I'll talk to y'all next week.
All right, have a good one. So I guess my thing is saying, like, okay, so now I got to have Microsoft, got to have a Google Authenticator or whatever, the two different things I'm using. So now how do I manage
that?
So
is this what Entra is telling you at this point?
Oh, I don't know. All I know with Entra right now is that when I go to log in, it tells me I need it's still doing the two-factor authentication, and I can't use Google Authenticator anymore.
Okay.
It only works. It'll send a text message to my phone number or an email, or it'll call me, or I could use Microsoft's authenticating application.
Yes.
So that's what I'm saying. So I find it kind of inconvenient that for the past 3 or 4 years, I've done everything through Google Authenticator for that, and now they're telling me, well, now you can't do that anymore. You have to use this application
now,
for this.
See,
and
right.
Then, you know, so then what's going to happen when I'm using, like, a whole other service?
Right. So here's, like I'm with you on that because I'm looking at Google Authenticator. So I got Google Authenticator being used for Facebook, for GitHub, for my Gmail, for my Nintendo account, for WordPress, for Canvas, for my college, for my master's degree, my company has it on there too. Although we have we go through Okta now, completely through Okta, but I do have a backup, you know, Google Authenticator. Then I have Discord, Alarm.com. That's my security system.
Right, but you have that's all two-factor authentication stuff.
Correct.
That's not passkey yet. But when all those services decide to implement passkey, what application are you going to have to use?
That's a good question.
I'm saying.
Yeah. I think is going to happen is I think like platforms like, for example, like my alarm.com, which is technically ADT. All right. That will probably use either Google or I would say we'll probably either use Google, Microsoft, or Apple. To do that, because it's gonna want they're gonna want to work on any of the platforms that's available for that. But if it's a Microsoft product, it's gonna be on the Microsoft Authenticator. If it's a Google product, probably on the Google Authenticator.
But if you're Amazon, if your alarm if your alarm application will work with any one of those authenticators, three different authenticators, why are we pinned from Microsoft to only a Microsoft product and Apple only to an Apple? And you don't have the answer to that. And I get, you know, and what I'm saying here isn't, you know, why, Joel, tell me why. Right. What I'm saying is it's kind of ridiculous that if all these other companies are going to have to support the other, you know, all three different implementations, why can't the other three big companies then also do the same thing so I don't have to have three different authenticating applications to manage passkeys on one device?
In fact, let me see if alarm.com will support passkeys.
Probably not.
It may not yet. I use Google Authenticator because, well, that's what I've been using for almost all my MFA, including Amazon. Everything. And by the way, pick an MFA. I don't care. You know, if you're a normal user, now granted, most of our audience aren't normal users, but if you're a normal user and you happen to run into this show, put MFA every fucking thing.
But that MFA is going away for passkey.
Well, Google hasn't said that yet. But they're offering it.
Yeah, but that's the direction it's going. And that's what I'm saying. It's like, and I'm with you there, Joel. I've been using Google Authenticator for X number of years now, for at least 5 years.
I know.
And now it's like, okay, now I can't use it for the, you know, Microsoft shit. It's becoming a pain in the ass.
Not to mention, in fact, when you search for, like, I did a Google for alarm.com/passkey, and one of the things that came up is this: configure a number passcode for the app. It's like, That's not a passkey. You know, so another thing. Now, granted, alarm.com. Now, I have, that's one thing I had to figure out with that. It's supposed to have a geofence with my phone. It means when I get within a certain range of my house, it's supposed to disable. It won't unlock the house, but it'll disable the alarm system. So that when I unlock it either with my physical key, which I have on my key ring, or if I unlock it with the alarm.com app, then at that point the security system will not go off. Okay. In fact, speaking of that, I actually just got an email. In fact, I need to call them.
But that has nothing to do with passkey.
All this does have nothing to do with passkey. But the other things, too, is that was really, really annoying with and this is rather common with security systems, is the panel I have, which is a Kilosis something, I don't know, I forget which model it is. But the one they installed in the house, and it's now coming up on 4 years ago. 4 years ago, it had Android 5. And it's still Android 5 that the thing is based on. Well, the thing is, that is pretty much going to be unsecure. I mean, not to mention, in fact, unsupported. Now, granted, it's not like I'm installing apps on my security system, okay? You know, it doesn't even have an app store. So, I mean, I don't generally care, you know, but it's like,
now, the security point, system, that's how you
well,
fix it.
That
will be obsolete in 5 years.
Well, that's true, too. But I'm going to call them and say, you know, okay, you're offering these upgrades and this expanding things. What options do I have? Like, can I get, like, some of the things I was starting to think about is another camera that's other than just the front door, so, like, I can shoot a camera at, like, maybe my car, you know? Because my front door cam doesn't do that. It's things like that. But it's ironic that a security system uses such an old and it's very common. It's very, very common with these security systems that are based on a smart device like an iPad, a tablet or something. Technically, too, that device also has a 4G connection to it that I do not pay for. It also can track, like, it can tell. Like,
wait, hold on 1 second. I got to step away for a second. Sure. I got to hook my mom. I'll be right back.
Sure. Anyway, while he's there though, I'm hoping I didn't get ripped off in a pair of shoes I bought. saw a link on Facebook for 80% off ultra running shoes.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I looked at it, and by the time you added shipping a pair of Ultra Lone Peak 9s for $50, I said, let me take a chance. I figured I got a shipping code, so it's on its way, but it's coming from China. Right. So it's like, oh, shit. Did I get ripped off? We'll see. Hopefully I don't. The way I figure is, even if I get a pair of shoes, if they're a shitty pair of shoes, well, that's fuck it. Fuck me, you know. But, you know, I could still wear them.
Yeah, just, I mean, if they're knockoffs, they might be, you know, crap. But
right,
that's if you get them.
If I get them, yeah. So we'll see. And granted, I have to look. I'm trying to remember where Ultra makes their shoes. I want to say I thought they made them in Vietnam, but
I can't remember.
Yeah, I don't either. But $50 for a pair of Ultras, if they really are Ultras, dude, that's a deal.
Yeah.
So I mean. So that I went ahead and ordered another pair of. I already have a good pair of Lone Peak 9s that I can compare them to. Although I got a different color, so because I got the orange and teal ones, which is a legit. It's a legit ultra color. If you go to the Ultra website, they make that color in that shoe, right? But Ultra wants about $99 for them right now, so. We'll see, because I wanted to have yet because I got my first 20-mile hike is of the year is this month. It's 3 weeks away on June 28th.
You'll make it this far.
And my next 5K is in a week and a half. The Aruna 5K, so I can go Thursday before I can go to. How ironic is this? They has the early pack. I don't have to go there. I can actually go the day of the race. So a lot of 5K races, you know, they have a pack of pickup, right?
Yeah.
And they'll have it before. Some of them may have, like, I know the hot chocolate one has it before and only before. So I have to go down there, like, the day before, I think it is, to get my packet. It's okay, though. They actually do, like, a big party kind of thing. While you're there, you get your packet, and you get your swag, and then they have samples of the hot chocolate and the things that you'll get on race day, and they also had like samples of the different Hershey partnered. I don't know if they make it, but they have there's a brand called Candy Shop Cocoa, and they have like. Had three different kinds of cocos, like York Peppermint Patty, Reese Cup, so on and so forth. And you can grab a sample packet, and they gave you a coupon, too, and things like that. And they had the Fleet Feet was there, so you can buy a pair of shoes there if you wanted to. You can buy more race swag, like they had different fleeces that you can buy that were different colors than the standard one, things of that nature. But that's one thing I'm thinking about doing. I haven't done it yet. I know I've ordered for two of the hikes. I know I had pre-ordered something. I can't remember what. I guess because they didn't have a lot of the hike swag ready. So I think like one or two. Like I think one I got like a T-shirt. The other got a sweatshirt. Right, and they're just generic Mammoth March. But they just released a month or so ago. Each event's going to have a specific T-shirt, and they're going to be different colors, too. Like, the Indiana one's blue, and it's got a different graphic on the back for each one. And then, like, the Ohio one, there's two different ones for Ohio. And I kind of want all three of those, but I'm also going to get at least one finisher shirt. the finisher shirt's fairly generic, so I don't know if I'm going to buy one for every one of those, but I'm definitely going to buy the event one for everyone. So if I finish probably the one I'm at most risk for not finishing is going to be this first one. And the only reason I'm saying that is unlike the other two, it has the steepest incline at about mile, 8 or 9. It has a 30% grade down, 30% grade straight back up. And I'm the most worried about that. If I can get past mile 9, I should make it. Because I've been, like I mentioned on a post I did on Facebook this week or in the last week or so, my training methodology for these events this year has completely and utterly changed. Last year, I had a super focus on hiking. It was later, too, in the year, so I had more time to hike, right? The weather's been freaking horrible in Ohio and lots of rain, and my closest trail that I can go on, I literally can go hike every day if I wanted to. The lower part of it's been flooded.
Yeah.
So I'd have needed waders to do that. So it's like, you know, granted, that's just to get, like, you know, used to walking on tree roots and shit like that. All right. It's a fucking easy trail. I mean, it's so easy. You know, I've done it bunches of times. You know, there's hardly any hills in and around me, which is part of the problem. That's one of the things I need to look at before the next few weeks is I need to go. We're talking about going up the High Banks in a week or two, and that has some steeper inclines, although I don't think they're as steep as the one in Indiana. Now, the last one should be fairly easy. The whole reason is that I think the steepest inclines may be 10 to 14%, which ain't nothing compared to some of what's down at Burr Oak and all that. And I've gone through the first half of the trail at Burr Oak. So down, that's the one in Southeast Ohio. That's the one in August, right before, it's the day before I'm supposed to go out on my mission trip. Which I found out we got the final team of everyone that's still dedicated to going. It's basically one family. So husband, wife, their kids, one of the daughters, boyfriends is going. And so it's me on the mission trip. It's going to be me, her husband, and the girlfriend's boyfriend. We're the three guys on the mission trip. Everybody else is female, which will be fun. So lots of estrogen there, but I just hope I don't do something stupid at the one on in August. So, and I'm debating too which shoes. My Lone Peak 7s are still in decent shape. They're filthy, but that's because they're my trail shoes. I'm not sure if I'm going to use those for the Mammoth March at the end of this month or not. I might switch to the 9s. And the only reason I'm saying that is those are size 11, and my 9s are 10.5. So I think the 11s may be a little too big on my feet now, mostly because, dude, I take my freaking shoes off. Take my shoes and socks off. I can see the tendons connecting down to each toe. That's how much weight I've lost, dude. I mean, I can literally see and I can feel the tendons right there. I can when I take my shirt off, I can feel my collarbone, okay? Which is like hardly, you know, I was never able to do before. So, I mean, I briefly flirted with 220. I was 220 earlier in the week. I gained about 4, but that's because I did a massive leg workout. Shit. Monday night, I think I did that. I did like 5 sets on the leg press at 415 pounds, and I took both my protein and glycogen replacement at the end of that workout too. And I'm gonna do the same thing tomorrow night. I wanted to go last night and do some weights, but I thought, well, let me do my upper body. I was going to do that probably Saturday, I'm thinking, mostly because I wanted to be extra strong. I felt like last week during my boot camp, I didn't give all I could because I didn't have it in me for part of it. So I wanted to kind of take a rest day because boot camp is kind of like how I test myself. Like, we do things like freaking burpees and what they do. They did this one that really killed me. You raise dumbbells to your side, all right? And then you pull them out in front of you, with your hand facing down. And I tried it. First, I tried it with the only pair of dumbbells I brought with me at the boot camp, which was 15 pounders, which I could do 15 on like curls and like hammer curls and bicep curls. That's easy. That one, I can't do 15. Hell, I can't do 10 on that one. Because it is brutal. So we were supersetting that with ones where we'd still hold them out to our side, but we'd rotate them. Just rotate them, you know. That's brutal, too. It's like, so I had to grab, I need to see if I can't grab one lighter pair and bring them. Because I know she's going to have us do it again tomorrow, probably. Unless she's not there. Yeah, and I think she's going to be there because I think the other coach has been traveling. So, but I'm excited. You know, it's going to be a big deal. If I could afford it, I would have been in Fenton, Missouri this week because tomorrow starts the SummerSlam at First Form headquarters, which is this big event they do. You know, it's the tickets are kind of pricey, but the nice thing is when you get to go to that, they send you home with a whole bunch of swag, including free product. So I just didn't get to go. Well, not free, you're paying for it technically, but you get SummerSlam specific things, which I hope they bring out. Like one of the ones I saw somebody post a picture of is that there's one of my favorite proteins they have is called Formula One Clear. Now I've had strawberry limeade. I have the watermelon, which I'm probably not going to order anymore. It's okay. I can drink it. It's just not my favorite. And lemonade. But they have a SummerSlam specific one, grape. And I'm like, damn it. I want that. And they're also bringing out now this one is available, a grape energy drink. So, which on the First Form Energy. I have some of the Screaming Freedom in my mini fridge right now. But, but the one thing I know for sure is just through my posts on social media, I know I'm helping people. I know I've inspired some friends to take up the mantle. I have a cousin that started working out after he seen my results, and you know I'm getting better all the time, healthier all the time. My VO2 max in the Garmin app has been on the increase lately. Some of my battery's low, but that's okay. It's at the end of the day. Like, it's 43 on VO2 max in Garmin, which is rated as good. And it says my fitness age is 51 and a half. Not too bad for a 54-year-old.
Nope.
And my training load is 621 acute, 567 chronic, which means I'm getting better. I killed myself on the treadmill. What did I do? My run this morning on the treadmill was 2.6 miles. So, and I've been doing intervals on that. Like I'll do like maybe 6 mile an hour for the first 5 minutes, go down, drop down to about 4, and then I'll kick it up to about 7. And I keep pushing myself to go faster and faster. So, mostly because I want to get, the ability to sustain, above 5 mile an hour longer or so. I figure if I push myself to go faster than that, then the lower speeds will be fine. I just don't have how in the hell do I control my pace when I'm outside? You know, that's going to be a hard thing to do.
You're the only runner I've ever spoken to that, and I don't speak to a lot of runners.
Right.
And, you know, I technically don't run anymore, but I'm walking now, but that talks about their pace in miles per hour.
I don't talk about it in that. That's just what I'm doing. Okay, you know.
I mean, I always just talk about, you know, how many minutes per mile. That's the
right.
The unit I always use.
That's just what I'm pushing on the treadmill. That's all. I mean, you know, it's so like. See, like my average.
You can't do that arithmetic in your head.
No, I was just thinking I could do it with a calculator. Okay, off my head. I don't know doing like 5 or 6 miles per hour. I mean,
where's my cadence? I was looking for it. Tracks your cadence. That's really what you're looking at. My average run cadence is 151 SPM or steps per minute, and the max run cadence is 187.
Now, Dave, so, you could translate steps per minute to miles per hour, right?
No, that's gonna be that's the key. Yeah, that's gonna be different for everybody.
Yeah, that's impossible. There,
you just need to calculate Joel's stride and my the steps was per always, minute. Yeah,
my cadence was always around 170, but but I took smaller steps on purpose. I mean,
yeah, but you know, it's just on tracking what I can, and I don't fully understand. You know, I'm obviously not, you know, relatively new at the running game, obviously, you know, but
their metrics and their relative, if you stick to the same units, you know what you can see progress or lack up there. I mean,
yeah, that's the thing. Yeah.
They're the units you're using, but I just didn't know if that was in the 4 years since I ran more than twice in a year. I didn't know people moved to miles per hour.
Now see, the Garmin has recently added Connect Plus as well. The Connect Plus adds some things, like you get extra challenges that you can do as a Connect Plus member. It's like $6 a month, so I'm like, figure what the hell, you know? All right. So, for example, here at the top, like it does this after every activity. Like it'll say, hey, your walking was longer distance or faster pace than you normally do, things like that, and tells you like now right now it's consists at the end of the day, says this week you've achieved 296 intensity minutes, exceeding your goal of 150 intensity minutes. Maintaining consistency is key to improving health, and you've reached your weekly goal for the past 4 weeks. Remember, every minute counts towards a healthier lifestyle, blah blah blah. Keep up the good work. Some of them are useful. This one is kind of useful. You know, the run ones I find more useful because it'll tell you. Now, a lot of times I'll disagree with it. Like tomorrow, I guarantee you, after boot camp, it'll say, you're a low-intensity workout. And I'm like, low-intensity, my fucking ass. Because like last week, I think we call an AMRAP, or not an AMRAP, but an AMRAP, I think is what she called it. But basically what we did was for 10 minutes, we did 5 burpees, 6 push-ups, and I think 6 squats. Yeah, 5, 6, and 6, over and over and over again. Just see as many as you can get in 10 minutes. All right. Those burpees got kicked my ass. Because I can do them now. That's the thing. The worst part, though, is she always has us do planks at the end. And I'll have us hold it for like 2 minutes, and then 1 minute, and then 30 seconds, upper and lower. And then she has us do like crazy ones, like hold the upper plank, but pull your knee up and touch it with your right hand. I'm like, I can't freaking do that. Not yet, anyway. Oh, I'll get there. You know, some of the things I wish I would need trying to work on is my flexibility in certain things like that. That's one that will do that probably, because it'll make me bend my body in ways I don't want to bend it.
Do you stretch?
I do stretch.
After or pre?
After, and it also depends. Like she's finally started doing that. The other coach always did have a stretch, because he's a runner. He's a marathoner. He's ran marathons before. All right. He's had at least 2 of them, and many halves, and many 10Ks and 5Ks. He's running the 5K with me and our team at church on the 14th. So, but he always has a stretch. He always has a stretch of calves, and we do bend over and touch the ground with the palms of your hands, which I can do. It feels damn good too. At the end, it's like, oh man, you stretch that back out and it feels so good. One of One of the things, though, I noticed since I lost my weight is when I go to do ab work on the ground, like sit-ups, I have no fucking padding in my ass anymore. It fucking hurts. It hurts. Oh, my God, does it hurt. And it doesn't hurt my abs. It hurts my butt. It's like, what the hell happened, man? I guess I lost all the fat on my ass. Jesus, it hurts. But I'm feeling optimistic about my athletic things this month. I feel pretty a lot more confident. Like I said, when I kind of started going off on this was my training mentality has completely changed. I wasn't doing strength training last year. This year I am. You know, my legs are freaking strong. My upper body's getting stronger. I was doing assisted pull-ups. I can do at least 10 at 120, and I started doing them. When I started doing them, I was doing them at 150 on the assisted machine. The more weight, the more assist you get from that. Well, the end goal is I'd like to be able to, if I can't do the full Murph workout next Memorial Day, I at least want to be able to do pull-ups, pull-up, you know, maybe 5, 10, you know, I don't know if I can do 100 by then, but we'll see. It's all heading in the right direction. I am working on I just been so stupid busy with the, with our trip to Louisiana, which that went like I said last week, it went pretty well, except for the holes in both two tires on the rental vehicle, which they compensated me for. I paid $40 out of my own pocket to fix the damn tires, but they paid me back when I dropped the car off.
My daughter bought a car last week.
Oh, what'd you get?
She got a Prius XLE. It's
sharp. Nice.
It's a sharp-looking car.
I'm kind of hoping. Rumor has it that Chevy's going to bring out a hybrid Suburban for 2026. And if so, that's what I want to get. Although, next year, if he does the USBC Open Championships, it's in Reno, Nevada. Joe ain't driving the Reno. That ain't happening. I'll fly. I'll pay to ship your shit. Because they do have a service called Bowlers Express where you can, they'll help you box up your bowling balls. And the only negative to it is you have to send them out 7 to 10 days before your squad bowls the event. And it takes another 7 to 10 days after the event to get your balls back. And they only ship the balls, so you have to take whatever you're going to carry them out to the lanes in with you. All right, so if he does it, I'm kind of trying to talk him into, instead of taking all 8, take 6, because I can get him a couple new, they have these 3-ball bags which can collapse down, so I can collapse those down and stick those in his suitcase. Otherwise, if he has to take his bowling ball bags, they'll probably have to still get gay checked because they're relatively large. In fact, I need to share the video. I had Luke shoot a video of me probably Wednesday night after the show, I think, of me lifting his bowling ball bag with the balls in it, 60 pounds worth of them. That was one of my workouts for the last week. But did I talk about the food I had in New Orleans last week? I might have.
Not all of it.
I had some crawfish etouffee that was poured over a baked potato. Oh, dude, that was so good. Big chunky pieces of crawfish in it. Yum, yum. And Café du Monde beignets and chicory coffee. And I didn't really – the coffee – I'd get it again if I went there again, but I'd probably – that's be the only time I get it. Not my favorite.
Yum, 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 yum.
Beignets are good, but they're kind of bland.
Dip them in chocolate. They're
kind of
right?
Like just. You could. Well, see, here's what I'm going to have to do. I'm going to have to seek out locally. We have Yonda, who used to run way down yonder New Orleans. Now she's at the beignet place that she started cooking a subset of their stuff. And she makes a strawberry beignet, which is good. Well, it sounds good. Haven't had it yet. But the muffalata, that was delicious. I might have to order the olive salad they put in the muffalata. That's a great sandwich if you never tried it before. And the one thing I didn't have, even though we bowled at the Raising Cane River Center, was Raising Cane's, because I can get that shit anytime.
I was going to say, how much was the Raising Cane's at the center? That sounds like...
You know, that's funny. They didn't have them.
They didn't have Raising Cane's.
I got
Cane's
Luke's. No, they had some generic like frozen shit that I got Luke at the bowling venue.
Huh. But they didn't have a Raising Cane's at the Raising Cane's venue?
No.
That seems like a missed opportunity.
That's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying. Now, I forget the name of the place we went to. It would have been Friday when we got there. There's this. We were in that kind of a. I'll say it like an artsy fartsy upper scale area of Baton Rouge. All right, it was not that far from LSU, and there's this place. Like it's an overpass over I-10. I-10 goes over it, all right. And right underneath I-10, there's all these restaurants. This restaurant wasn't in the overpass area, but it's right next to it. And I had probably one of the best chicken club sandwiches I'd ever had. And it wasn't like lunch meat chicken; it was a chicken breast on the chicken club. It was pretty damn tasty too.
It sounds good.
Yeah, it had like bacon on it and mayonnaise. And
the only restaurant in my hometown have a chicken club like that. A big piece of breast meat in there.
Oh yeah, yeah. It's way better than the lunch meat, the chicken clubs with just the cold cuts. Way better. I need to find that video.
But if you're just going to eat a luncheon meat club, I like a fried egg on that. That's good.
Yes. Yes, I agree with that. Yeah, you ever had a fried egg on a hamburger?
Yeah.
Yep.
Oh, man, that's delicious.
My kids get upset if I make, like, most any Korean dish if I don't have an egg in it. On it.
Really?
Like bulgogi with egg. I made tteokbokki. It's always got to have an egg on it. Korean beef bowls. Got to have eggs. They get disappointed. I love egg on it. Like egg and ramen. And
yeah.
Just about like anything Korean.
Egg and ramen I get.
Is accented by an egg.
My daughter had me try, I guess it's instant potatoes in ramen. I mean, I'm talking about
instant potatoes in the ramen.
I'm talking about cheap ramen. You know, the cheapest ramen you can buy in Walmart. Get that and get you some instant potatoes and put them together.
Why?
Is it good?
No, it's not. It did not enhance the ramen. It made it thicker.
Yeah.
I mean, it was no less edible, but I liked it better without them.
Now, here's my question for you. You're talking about, like, top ramener.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, when you make that...
College kid ramen, yeah.
Yeah, when you make that, do you make...
Broke as fuck
ramen.
Do you make
a soup out of it, or do you make just the noodles?
Do you drain off the water?
I drain off the water.
Okay.
See, I've done both, but it gets really fucking salty if you drain off the water.
I drain off almost all the water. I leave some in there. I mean,
because that's interesting. Because like when I grew up, my mom always made it like a soup.
Yeah, that's how.
And
I
then
grew
my
up.
My college girlfriend, when she made it, I'm like, well, where's the soup? And she's like, what do you mean? And like,
yeah,
and I really prefer.
And your college girlfriend wasn't Aaron, was it?
No, I usually like a couple tablespoons of water I leave.
Yeah.
That's to right. help with that, but I drain off the water now anyway. I
and
like
that's
it without
been a gradual
it.
Progress for me, I guess, over and the last 30 years. I've just drained more
sriracha in it too, man. Put some sriracha on it too.
You doctor it up there. You throw some onions and peas and corn and
maybe some fish cake if you got it.
Yeah, and yeah.
What is the actual name for the fish cakes that you put on that? Shit. Not for furikake is the spice.
Are you talking about Naruto?
Spice. Maybe that's it, yeah.
Like, if you're getting that fish cake that kind of is like...
With
it's
the
like
pink swirl.
Pink on the end. It's got like a swirl. I believe that's called Naruto. Named after the enemy.
Yeah.
Or the enemy yep. characters yeah. named after that. Not
the name, the man.
That would not make any sense because that's been around forever.
Right. Yeah, I'm going to have to go. You know that if you do ever come to OLF again, you can get good ramen, like, at the North Market now.
That's great.
Although I don't know why you get that, because there's so much better food than just the ramen. And not that ramen's bad, okay? You know, because that's good ramen. That's really good shit ramen, you know, with all the trimmings, you know, egg and all that shit, you know. Or you can get... tonkatsu ramen and stuff like that there, which ain't the typical ramen in the fucking bowl. But now, what I don't understand is who is it that does it? Is it it's Nissan? I saw they had s'mores flavored ramen.
Okay,
yeah, yeah, exactly what you think. Chocolate marshmallows. Ramen?
Nah.
Yeah, no, I don't think so. And I saw another weird one too. Did I say, was it pizza ramen? No, I mean, if you're gonna eat grocery store ramen, go for a Shin or even the chicken bulldog one that I've had before, which is technically that's Korean ramen. And fucking hot as hell too. But
I like the hot ramen.
Have you ever tried the twice hot bulldog one, though?
I've tried the hottest one I could find in a grocery store. I couldn't tell you the name of it, but it was good.
All right. Black with the stupid flaming duck on it?
Yeah.
Okay. You've tried the one I've had.
It was got like
Dan's had it, too.
Yeah.
So did his daughter. That video, yeah, I sent you. Yeah, that's the one I sent you. That video you had, I think it was Lily tried to bite of it, and she's like, oh my god, it's so hot. That was funny video. And Dan's like, yeah, it's hot. It's good, though. Dan's like, it's good, though. And I think Aaron thought it was way too hot, too. That was just funny watching that video he made.
Yeah, they eat it now. We've been able to find it around here now, and so they
yeah, I
like
get it
Lillian
down too
will
locally,
eat it.
Yeah,
Lillian will eat it. It's they like
it's
the
good.
Hot stuff.
My youngest daughter, she eats. I mean, they're not that hot. I don't think anything you can buy at a gas station or a grocery store is hot. But she eats Takis, but she eats it with milk. I mean, not with milk, but she drinks
okay.
milk. But not
well, that
not
makes sense.
Not to combat the heat. She likes the taste combination, which I don't,
yeah,
I
get
don't
it.
See. I
yeah,
don't.
I get it. I can see it.
But she
I
loves
can see it.
Milk.
The key to eating those nuclear noodles, though, is don't fucking stop. Just keep eating it. Do not pass go. Finish the whole bowl in one shot. You take a minute or two break, that shit builds, and you're done. I mean, it is that, but it's good. I mean, that's the thing, is it tastes good. It's one of those few things that's, oh my God, hot, but tastes good. And, you know, I'll get a packet every once in a while. It's been a while since I had any. I need to get back to, like, I was making that chicken and kale and sweet potato salad. I need to find different one. I got kind of tired of that one, so I switched to some doing some other things for lunch this week. I'm trying to remember the name brand. I found a couple. Like, I found one that was a protein-forward, like, frozen thing. They had, like, 30 grams of protein in the whole lunch.
It's 10:05, Dan.
This is my bedtime.
So it'll be the Wednesday before my race. My race is a week from Saturday. So that's my next 5K, and I'm ready to go. I'm going to crush that sucker out, and we'll get a personal record. That's what I'm shooting for. Or at a minimum, if I don't get a PR, I want to beat my last race, which was the one in November, the first one I ever did.
Wait, when is this race coming up?
June 14th.
Oh, okay.
Father's Day weekend.
You know, good question. I don't know if I'm going to be here next week because I have to go to a meeting. I may be home by then, but I don't know.
What you got, good DC?
No. I just a local meeting here.
Vital Pursuit. That's a new line of frozen food I found at the store.
Right. I will play us out. Ready? Here we go.
Go for it.
Oh my God! It's
Hacker Public Radio. Hacker Public Radio is a daily podcast by the hacker community for the hacker community. If you're interested in technology, creative thinking, hacking, Linux, or any kind of computer, that kind of stuff, you should listen to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.com.
So we can paint anything we want?
Anything at all.
How about if I paint your fine ass? Yeah, with my tongue brush. Shut up. Just shut up.
Daddy has a gun!
It's over.
Well, you were making Egg Foo Young in the kitchen. I was in the dining room having sushi.
Boom. What's this stuff called? Vital what?
Yeah, that stuff's Vital Pursuit. They have, like, one of the things I have had, I've had the chicken mozzarella pizza that has 33 grams of protein in it, and it's pretty damn good. It's microwavable stuff, although they have instructions for it that you can air fry it, and I haven't tried that yet. I need to try that because it'll probably be a little bit better in the air fryer. And the two pizzas that I've tried weren't cauliflower crust, so they actually taste better than cauliflower crust. Although cauliflower crust can be good. And today I had the Southwest style beef taco bowl. That says 22 grams of protein.
Was it good?
But this, yeah.
I'm trying to do this time around, you know, back when the pool was open, I was still working. And I worked a half a mile from this pool place that I always took my water to. So I'm going to start testing my own water and I'm trying to do it all myself instead of taking it someplace. So.
Oh, there you go. Get
and that I used little. To, I used to spend, you know, 45 minutes a week, you know, vacuuming and brushing. I'm going to try to streamline that. I was going to buy a robot, but I didn't.
Yeah, you'll have one by the end of the summer, won't
probably,
you?
Probably. Yeah,
you'll get sick of it. How much is a robot?
The really good ones are over 1,000. You can get a You can get a good one for, you know, $600 or $700.
The $600 or $700 one runs for about 5 minutes and then it floats belly up in the pool, right?
Well, more likely what it does is it lasts you about 2 years and then it quits.
Oh.
I don't want to do that. So I bought a traditional vacuum that you hook up to the skimmer, and it's got one moving part. If you take care of it, it's replaceable, the moving part is. So it potentially could last 10 years, and it was $250. So, I mean.
How do you get the robot vacuum in and out of the pool?
The wireless ones, I guess the Bluetooth ones, you just drop it in the pool.
No, can you hear me now? We can hear you. We can hear you just fine.
Well,
how do you get it out?
Well, they're supposed to park themselves on the side of the wall, you know, so you can reach it. Right before they go dead, they go park. It's like a Roomba would, but it parks on the side of the pool so you can reach in and get it.
Oh, I guess on the shallow end, right?
Yeah.
Not in the deep end. That would stink if it was a deep end.
Well, it could park on the side in the deep end as long as it's, you know, within arm's reach. You know, I don't know how close to the surface it parks, but
that's what I mean. If it's down at the bottom, how much does thing weigh?
Yeah, I think there's some of them are 18 pounds.
Oh, it'd be a little challenging to swim up holding an 18 pound.
Yeah.
I don't know. You might have to drag it across the bottom a few times before you get it up to the shallow end that you can pick it up and walk out of the pool with it.
If I get anything robotic, it'll be a skimmer. It floats on top and just collects the leaves before they drop to the bottom.
Well, if it's one that does the bottom and you're expecting to have to drag it, that's when you put a bobber on it.
Yeah, and they have hooks on them too, so you can reach down there with a pole and grab it.
Wait, are you talking about a skimming one, or are you talking about one that cleans the bottom?
I was talking about the ones that clean the bottom. I ruled out. I didn't purchase one of those, but I'm thinking about purchasing one that cleans the top.
You got one that cleans the top, one that cleans the bottom, one that cleans Dave. It's got a little hole in the side of it.
One that cleans Dave's bottom.
It's a 23,000 gallon bidet.
Yeah. Oh, man. So when's your pool opening? Or is it open?
It's open now. It's just the water's still a little bit cold. It got filled up, I guess, Friday.
Did you have to pay somebody to come out and fill it up?
No, I mean, they use my water. I mean,
you just use your hose?
Yep.
There you go.
And water, I think, they just increased the rates. It's $25 for the first 1,000 gallons, and then it's $5 a gallon for everything over that. Oh, no, for every 1,000 gallons over. I can't remember. I read it.
Wait. How much is it for the first 1,000 gallons?
I think it's $25.
Only $25 for 1,000 gallons?
A normal power bill for me and my wife and my long-haired 23-year-old daughter is between 40 and 50 bucks a month. This bill, next bill will probably be, you know, 120, 130, I'm guessing, but I don't know. We'll see.
So they only charge you
for your electric?
No, for the water.
Oh, okay. I was going to say.
No, electric's much worse.
I mean, that's pretty cheap for
us. Yeah,
that sounds cheap. So it's $25 for 1,000 gallons.
I think.
And then $5 for the next 1,000?
$5 for the next, I can't remember if it said 1,000.
That's extremely low cost.
Yeah, it is.
Because, you know, we end up using, I don't know, what is it, 250, 300 something gallons, something crazy like that. And it's still at least like $150.
Wow! No, our power bills has always been cheap down here, but we have PCBs in our water. So.
But I'm also in Texas, and
there is no
we
water.
Go through months of drought. So
yeah, well, we have living on the east side of the Appalachian Mountains. We have lots of rivers. There's lots of usable water here. So.
South Carolina and Clemson, they just hook the that the toilet just goes right back into the drinking water, right?
I know.
Isn't that how it works?
I got a septic tank.
Dave's turning on the sink in the kitchen. It's like nothing's coming out. He's like, somebody flush the toilet.
Oh, horrible. Horrible.
We need more
human
water.
Well, I finished rebuilding the mini rack.
Well, you should save that for the show.
I should.
Oh, we should start the show. I didn't
There's
realize.
A show?
Not as well.
Yeah, let me get this lined up. I should have done this beforehand, but that's the way it goes.
What is it, 11:01?
Yep.
Yes, it is. All day. All right. 1101. Here we go. What the hell happened? Wait a minute, it was just working a minute ago.
It knew you were trying to start the show.
Like that, oh, that doesn't make any sense. Because I just played the audio right to the, what is the problem with this thing? It's recording. What? All right. Let me reconnect.